Julie, thanks so much for joining me today. Can you tell me about Disability Rights New York and its mission?
Sure, Corinne. Thanks very much for having us. Disability Rights New York is New York State's designated protection and advocacy system for people with disabilities. One of our core functions is investigating abuse, neglect, and rights violations of people with disabilities in places where they're served.
The organization put out a report on March 9th with New York Lawyers for the Public Interest and the New York Civil Liberties Union about the failures of New York's COVID-19 response with regard to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Can you talk about what the report found?
We knew that people in group homes with intellectual and developmental disabilities were dying at a much higher rate. Group home residents really didn't have access to PPE, personal protective equipment, nor the staff that served them in a way that was equal to or similar to staff and residents in nursing homes. This was very surprising to us because the care and confines in a nursing home is very similar to what is in a group home. Group homes often are single family houses. They may have 4 to as many as 10 people living in them. There's shared bathrooms, there's often shared bedrooms, there's shared common spaces. And in addition to that, the staff that support people in group homes often have close physical contact with them. They're aiding them with bathing and other kinds of intimate care, just as people in nursing homes require. The guidance around quarantines and around testing protocols was kind of a one size fits all. We also found that the state wasn't really transparent in the information and data that it was collecting from early March about the rate of deaths and the rate of COVID infections among staff and residents.
The organizations involved in the report were likely aware of some of these issues in real time over the past year. For example, the lack of sufficient personal protective equipment. What attempts were made to address these issues with the state? And what was their response?
On March 25th, we had contacted the governor by letter, identifying the issue with PPE and requesting that group homes be given equal priority with nursing homes at local emergency management offices. Unfortunately, we got no response from the governor. About a week and a half later, we filed a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights, asserting that it was discriminatory not to provide that same kind of prioritization for people with disabilities in group homes.
There's an argument to be made that the pandemic came on so quickly that we were all learning as we go. The state was learning what it should be telling people who worked in and lived in congregate settings.
Certainly, that's a part of it. None of us had encountered a pandemic before. But on the other hand, there are safety plans and protocols that are established by various agencies and should be in place by the state. It didn't take specialized knowledge to know how important it was to quarantine people, how important it was that we minimize contacts and the spread of, for example, a staff person who is working in multiple sites or even working in multiple residences for a particular provider. And the guidance that came out was actually quite late, and it was quite impractical. It seems evident throughout the pandemic and the policies that came out that oftentimes OPWDD was just sort of passing on guidance from the Department of Health, and that wasn't practical for a group home setting. And so to get guidance that says, oh, separate people, keep them in their bedroom, make sure they wear PPE, don't have physical contact, these are just impractical. I think OPWDD should have been given a stronger voice in articulating how can we make this happen? How can we open quarantine centers? How can we facilitate the process of using alternate spaces and kind of cutting through the red tape so that agencies could be more nimble in their response?
You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I'm speaking with Julie Keegan, Director of Programs for People with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities at Disability Rights New York. A lot of the staff fell ill, and reading the report, it's pretty clear to me that that had a huge role in transmission to residents. Who are these workers, and how does the fact that they had to work multiple jobs in other facilities to support themselves play into what happened here?
Well, that's a great observation. And it's absolutely true, because in reality, when PAWS went into effect, residents of group homes were confined to the group home. There was no going out. They weren't even going to the grocery store or things like that, like some, you know, the rest of us were able to do. So really, the only way that someone could get infected was through the staff that were supporting them in their group homes. Going into the pandemic, there was already a shortage of staff in the role of direct support professionals, or DSPs. DSPs are disproportionately consist of people of color, particularly Black and African American individuals. They are mostly women, and they are mostly born, not mostly, but disproportionately born in another country. That arguably is a reflection of bias. These are very difficult, challenging jobs that are not valued by society. And certainly the minimum wage, or barely above minimum wage pay scale, sort of reflects that. And so these individuals are living themselves in smaller confines, typically. They are working multiple jobs. They're often heads of households trying to make ends meet. And so their exposure certainly was greater than maybe people serving other communities. So when they come in to work and feel the pressure to work, because there is such staffing shortage, they are bringing the virus, or potentially bringing the virus, into the home, and then may be working in multiple sites for a particular provider. And so whatever exposure they might have at work on site could also be spread to other homes. And certainly that contributed to it. But if I may say this, I think those direct support professionals are probably some of the greatest heroes I've encountered during this pandemic. Many of them were working multiple shifts, staying overnight, staying weeks at a time in order to minimize the risk of going out and coming back in. And we saw that in a variety of agencies, of people just doing whatever they could to try to keep the death rate down. And I have no doubt that they made a big difference in doing that.
What impact has the report had, and what do you hope comes of it?
That is a great question. The impact of the report, I think, is growing. I think certainly the legislature has taken notice of the report. We're hearing from families and providers and others that they just appreciate the fact that someone has collated the information and the experience of people with disabilities in group homes during the pandemic. What is most important here is that we want this information to shape policy for the future, in the event of future pandemics, in the event that we see similar kinds of danger to people in group homes. And in that regard, the state's response has been pretty disappointing. We provided a copy of the report in a draft form to OPWDD, the New York State Department of Health, and the governor in December, well in advance of publishing it, to give them an opportunity to correct any errors, to inform us of any differences that they had found, any omissions. And we didn't hear back. We extended the time for the response and heard back from them on February 1st. And their response, which is included in the report as an appendix, was pretty cavalier. It was kind of like, we did the best we can, and the federal government is largely to blame for this. And they pointed to some of the initiatives that really made a difference, but those were initiatives that were actually led by the provider agencies themselves. They were trying to figure it out for themselves, and many did a really good job of doing that. There was no real acknowledgement of the recommendations we made in the report, which I think are very solid, very concrete, and evidence-based. And so that has been frustrating. And so our goal right now is to work with the legislature in perhaps holding hearings, or for an investigation to be initiated and a task force created, for the main purpose of creating policies so that in the event that this happens again, that we're prepared, that people don't have to die, that people are not placed at unnecessary risk, that staff are compensated correctly for working in dangerous and hazardous conditions. that there is a robust staff in place prior to any kind of major crisis, so that staffing is not an issue, that we don't have to rely on people who are sick themselves to take care of people who are very vulnerable.